Chapter 16. Have an idea that Mrs. Alden, at her son's wish, would have set fire to her house and emigrated to the moon without any sign of surprise or apprehension, and that Miss Alden Nathalie, caressingly Natalka, would have given her assent to the scheme. Their proud devotion to that young man became clear to me in a very short time. Following his directions, they went straight to Switzerland, to Zurich, where they remained the best part of a year. From Zurich, which they did not like, they came to Geneva. A friend of mine in Lausanne, a lecturer in history at the university, he had married a Russian lady, a distant connection of Mrs. Alden's, wrote to me suggesting I should call on these ladies. It was a very kindly meant business suggestion. Miss Alden wished to go through a course of reading the best English authors with a competent teacher. Mrs. Alden received me very kindly. Her bad French, of which she was smilingly conscious, did away with the formality of the first interview. She was a tall woman in a black silk dress. A wide brow, regular features, and delicately cut lips testified to her past beauty. She sat upright in an easy chair and in a rather weak, gentle voice told me that her Natalka simply thirsted after knowledge. Her thin hands were lying on her lap, her facial immobility had in it something monachal. In Russia, she went on, all knowledge was tainted with falsehood. Not chemistry and all that, but education generally, she explained. The government corrupted the teaching for its own purposes. Both her children felt that. Her Natalka had obtained a diploma of a superior school for women, and her son was a student at the St. Petersburg University. He had a brilliant intellect, a most noble and selfish nature, and he was the oracle of his comrades. Early next year, she hoped he would join them, and they would then go to Italy together. In any other country but their own, she would have been certain of a great future for a man with the extraordinary abilities and the lofty character of her son. But in Russia, the young lady sitting by the window turned her head and said, "Come, mother, even with us things change with years." Her voice was deep, almost harsh, and yet caressing in its harshness. As he had a dark complexion, with red lips and a full figure. She gave the impression of strong vitality. The old lady sighed. "You are both young, you two. It is easy for you to hope. But I too, am not hopeless. Indeed, how could I be with a son like this?" I addressed Miss Alden, asking her what authors she wished to read. She directed upon me her gray eyes shaded by black eyelashes, and I became aware, notwithstanding my years, how attractive physically her personality could be to a man capable of appreciating in a woman something else than the mere grace of femininity. Her glance was as direct and trustful as that of a young man yet unspoiled by the world's wise lessons. And it was intrepid, but in this intrepidity there was nothing aggressive. A naive yet thoughtful assurance is a better definition. As he had reflected already in Russia, the young begin to think early, but as he had never known deception as yet, because obviously as he had never yet fallen under the sway of passion. She was to look at her was enough, very capable of being roused by an idea or simply by a person. At least, so I judged with, I believe, an unbiased mind. For clearly my person could not be the person, and as to my ideas, we became excellent friends in the course of our reading. It was very pleasant. Without fear of provoking a smile, I shall confess that I became very much attached to that young girl. At the end of 4 months I told her that now she could very well go on reading English by herself. It was time for the teacher to depart. My pupil looked unpleasantly surprised. Mrs. Alden, with her immobility of feature and kindly expression of the eyes, uttered from her armchair in her uncertain French, "Mais la mi reviendra." And so it was settled. I returned not 4 times a week as before, but pretty frequently. In the autumn we made some short excursions together in company with other Russians. My friendship with these ladies gave me a standing in the Russian colony which otherwise I could not have had. The day I saw in the papers the news of Mr. DePS' assassination, it was a Sunday. I met the two ladies in the street and walked with them for some distance. Mrs. Alden wore a heavy gray cloak, I remember, over her black silk dress, and her fine eyes met mine with a very quiet expression. "We have been to the late service," she said. "Natalka came with me. Her girlfriends, the students here, of course don't. With us in Russia the church is so identified with oppression, that it seems almost necessary, when one wishes to be free in this life, to give up all hope of a future existence. But I cannot give up praying for my son," she added with a sort of stony grimness, coloring slightly, and in French, "si n'est plus d'être qu'une habitude. T may be only habit." Miss Alden was carrying the prayer book. She did not glance at her mother. "You and Victor are both profound believers," she said. "I communicated to them the news from their country which I had just read in a cafe. For a whole minute we walked together fairly briskly in silence. Then Mrs. Alden murmured, 'There will be more trouble, more persecutions for this. They may be even closing the university. There is neither peace nor rest in Russia for one, but in the grave.' 'Yes. The way is hard,' came from the daughter, looking straight before her at the chain of Jura covered with snow, like a white wall closing the end of the street. 'But Concord is not so very far off.' 'That is what my children think,' observed Mrs. Alden to me. I did not conceal my feeling that these were strange times to talk of Concord. Nathalie Alden surprised me by saying, as if he had thought very much on the subject, that the Occidentals did not understand the situation. She was very calm and youthfully superior. 'You think it is a class conflict, or a conflict of interests, as social contests are with you in Europe. But it is not that at all. It is something quite different.' 'It is quite possible that I don't understand,' I admitted. That propensity of lifting every problem from the plane of the understandable by means of some sort of mystic expression is very Russian. I knew her well enough to have discovered her scorn for all the practical forms of political liberty known to the Western world. I suppose one must be a Russian to understand Russian simplicity, a terrible corroding simplicity in which mystic phrases clothe a naive and hopeless cynicism. I think sometimes that the psychological secret of the profound difference of that people consists in this, that they detest life, the irremediable life of the earth as it is, whereas we Westerners cherish it with perhaps an equal exaggeration of its sentimental value. But this is a digression indeed. I helped these ladies into the tramcar, and they asked me to call in the afternoon. At least Mrs. Alden asked me as she climbed up, and her Natalka smiled down at the dense Westerner indulgently from the rear platform of the moving car. The light of the clear wintry forenoon was softened in her gray eyes. "Mr. Razumov's record, like the open book of fate, revives for me the memory of that day as something startlingly pitiless in its freedom from all forebodings. Victor Alden was still with the living, but with the living whose only contact with life is the expectation of death. He must have been already referring to the last of his earthly affections, the hours of that obstinate silence, which for him was to be prolonged into eternity. That afternoon the ladies entertained a good many of their compatriots more than was usual for them to receive at one time, and the drawing room on the ground floor of a large house on the Boulevard des Philosophes was very much crowded. I outstayed everybody, and when I rose Miss Alden stood up too. I took her hand, and was moved to revert to that morning's conversation in the street. Admitting that we Occidentals do not understand the character of your I began. It was as if he had been prepared for me by some mysterious foreknowledge. She checked me gently, their impulses there. She sought the proper expression and found it, but in French. Their movements tame. Her voice was not much above a whisper. "Very well," I said. "But still we are looking at a conflict. You say it is not a conflict of classes, and not a conflict of interests. Suppose I admitted that. Are antagonistic ideas then, to be reconciled more easily, can they be cemented with blood and violence into that concord which you proclaim to be so near? She looked at me searchingly with her clear gray eyes, without answering my reasonable question, my obvious, my unanswerable question. It is inconceivable, I added, with something like annoyance. Everything is inconceivable, she said. The whole world is inconceivable to the strict logic of ideas. And yet the world exists to our senses, and we exist in it. There must be a necessity superior to our conceptions. It is a very miserable, and a very false thing, to belong to the majority. We Russians shall find some better form of national freedom than an artificial conflict of parties, which is wrong, because it is a conflict and contemptible, because it is artificial. It is left for us Russians to discover a better way. Mrs. Alden had been looking out of the window. She turned upon me the almost lifeless beauty of her face, and the living benign glance of her big dark eyes. That's what my children think, she declared. I suppose, I addressed Miss Alden, that you will be shocked if I tell you that I haven't understood. I won't say a single word. I've understood all the words. But what can be this era of disembodied concord you are looking forward to? Life is a thing of form. It has its plastic shape and a definite intellectual aspect. The most idealistic conceptions of love and forbearance must be clothed in flesh, as it were, before they can be made understandable. I took my leave of Mrs. Alden, whose beautiful lips never stirred. She smiled with her eyes only. Nathalie Alden went with me as far as the door, very amiable. Mother imagines that I am the slavish echo of my brother Victor. It is not so. He understands me better than I can understand him. When he joins us, and you come to know him, you will see what an exceptional soul it is. She paused. He is not a strong man in the conventional sense, you know, she added. But his character is without a flaw. I believe that it will not be difficult for me to make friends with your brother Victor. Don't expect to understand him quite, she said, a little maliciously. He is not at all Western at bottom. And on this unnecessary warning I left the room with another bow in the doorway to Mrs. Alden in her armchair by the window. The shadow of autocracy, all unperceived by me, had already. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.